Welcome back to episode number 2 of the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse, our podcast where we connect with some of the best baseball minds in the game today. On behalf of the American Baseball Coaches Association, we'd like to sincerely thank you for listening in, and we are certain you're going to enjoy this episode. My name is Jeremy Schieninger, and I have the distinct pleasure of sitting down and talking the mental side of hitting with one of the very best in our game, Steve Springer, the mental coach for the Toronto Blue Jays organization. You also may know him from QualityAtBats.com, his CDs, his speaking engagements, and his social media presence. Spring's been a loyal ABCA member, been up on the main stage before, and is always a treat to listen to. This interview is audio gold, some of quality information for our coaches, for players that can positively affect your game. We hope you listen in. We know you're really going to enjoy it. And again, thank you for what you do for the game of baseball. All right, Spring, man, thanks for being on with us. Talk us through a little bit what you've been going through this weekend, man. You've been traveling around the country. What's up with you?
What's going on, Sheets? I'm good, man. I'm the mental coach of the Toronto Blue Jays, so I go on the road for 2 weeks, come home for a week, go on the road 2 weeks, come home for a week. And right now I'm in Dunedin with our low A ball team, or high A ball team, and got 2 more days here. Then I go see our AAA in Raleigh-Durham. It's our Buffalo team, and I might have the best job in the world. I mean, I go and I sit in the dugout and speak with kids, and, you know, it's just been awesome.
I think for every coach that's listening to this, they would all agree you do have the best job in the world. And this is kind of leads us into the first question, man. As we get going, like you said, being the mental coach for the Blue Jays and all the work that you're doing, there still might be some coaches out there that may aren't familiar with what you're doing. So give them kind of a quick intro into you and your background and how you arrived at where you're at today.
Well, it's really amazing. I mean, I consider myself to be the baseball version of Rudy. When I was, freshman in high school, I was 4'11", 90 pounds. I got 3 at-bats. I probably barely made the team because my brother was the star of the team. My sophomore year, I stayed on soft frosh. All my buddies went up to varsity. My junior year, all my buddies are on varsity, and I'm on JV. I got to play, which was important. And, you know, my senior year, I'm 5'8", 140 pounds now, so I grew 9 inches in high school. I just went from tiny to small. But it's my time to shine. I got nobody ahead of me. Yeah, and I had a sophomore take my job. And so I didn't start my senior year in high school. I'm from Huntington Beach, California. My brother, you know, he was all state at Golden West. I didn't get one phone call to come play for. And, you know, the coach at Golden West didn't even call me. I'm just thinking, you know, my brother's a starter. He knows I'm coming out. So I went out for the team that summer, and I got cut. Which is still baffling to me how bad this coach thought I sucked. I mean, my brother's all state. I can't
right.
play first base. So I go home 3 days later. I'm home watching Oprah with my mom, not knowing what I'm going to do. My brother comes home with the uniform because 3 guys quit. So 19 years old, freshman in college. I got 3 at-bats the whole year, coached first base, and ended up playing in the big leagues. And, you know, fortunately, I grew 4 inches when I was 20 years old. You know, and if there's any kids out there, you know, this is the best thing about the game is you don't have to be 6'4", 6'2" to play in the big leagues. I mean, you know,
right.
It's one of my go-to lines. What's Dustin Pedroia, 6'5"? I mean, this guy's 5'7" with a good pair of cleats on, and he can shrink 2 inches and be a big leaguer. This is not about being tall.
Yeah.
It's about being a baseball player. It's about having instincts. Because I was always a really good player when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12. I was all-star. I just didn't grow an inch from the time I was 12 to 15. So I know if I'm a coach in high school, and I got a kid that's undersized, I'm going to ask that kid if he ever made an all-star team when he was 11, 12. Because I think those are the guys that get missed a little bit. You know, they haven't got their
right.
their your young man body, let alone their man body. And kids are going to grow.
Yeah.
And I want the athletic kids. I want kids with instincts on my team. And fortunately, I grew 4 inches when I was 20. It doesn't happen to everybody. But I went from a second-string second baseman to an all-conference shortstop in 1 year. I had full rides to UC Irvine, UCLA. And I'm going to UCLA, and it was the greatest 5 days of my life until he looked at my transcripts. He's like, really, buddy? He's like, badminton? So I couldn't get in, which sort of sucks. So kids out there, get good grades, man. Let your ability dictate where you're going to go to school. I ended up going to University of Utah as a shortstop, and I've hurt my arm. I DH'd the whole year. And this is the best thing about baseball is, you know, whether you're in travel ball, high school, college, or pro baseball, you're going to get evaluated every day that you play. By somebody,
mm-hmm.
and we were playing Brigham Young one day, 50 scouts in the stands to see Rick Aguilera, Wally Joyner, and Corey Snyder. And I went 5 for 5 with a bomb, 2 doubles, and 5 RBIs that day. And it was, I know it was that day because it was the very first day I played the outfield of my life. I sucked in the outfield. I was terrible. And thank God the ball wasn't hit to me that day. I might not have got drafted. I got drafted by the New York Mets in the 20th round, 246, 11 home runs. Just okay. Went home. My brother got picked up by the Tigers. You know, we lifted. We got bigger, stronger, faster, not taller. And I went to my first spring training, and I barely made the low A ball team as the fifth outfielder. So, you know, the first month of the season, I got like 30 at-bats. I'm coaching first base. I'm like, I got this. I've been doing it my whole life. I'm almost pro at it. Fortunately, you know, our second baseman got traded on like May 1st, and I told the coach, I said, Coach, I'm an infielder. And he looked at me, and he paused, and he said, my God, you suck in the outfield. I'm like, I know I'm an infielder. And so he lets me play second base, and everything's going pretty good. Eighth inning ground ball, double play right between my legs. So that sort of sucks. So I didn't play that for about a week. Week went by, gave me another opportunity. And eighth inning ground ball, double play right between my legs again. But I got 4 hits that day. And anybody out there, you know, if you want to play at the next level or the highest level, we got to hit. And I ended up leading the league in hits. I played every day the rest of the year. I was second in the league in hitting behind Vince Coleman. Like I said, I led the league in hits. I had 50 hits in August, and I still didn't know what I was doing yet. But now I'm sort of a prospect and go to the instructional league. They try to make me a shortstop. I didn't have the greatest feet. So I ended up going back to second base and, you know, going home. Me and my brother lifting bigger, stronger, faster, go to my second spring training. And I'm working out with high A ball. And I see my farm director, and he's like, Spring, how you doing? I'm like, well. You know, I don't mean to be an idiot here, but I just led a league in hits in A-ball. I don't think I need to be an A-ball. I feel I should be in double A. And he looked at me, he paused, and he walked away. I'm like, wow, that went great. but it did because it made sense to him. The next day I was in double A. And my double A team, we had 18 guys playing the big leagues. It was sick. And we won it all. So the next year I go to triple A. You know, three and a half years ago, I'm coaching first base, and I was one step away from the big leagues after 3 years, and I ended up spending 11 years in AAA. I ended up getting 2 hits in each league in the big leagues. I played in 1,591 minor league games. I had 1,592 hits. I like that. Yep. And I'm teaching Major League All-Stars how to compete, man, and I absolutely love it. I made a CD talking about the mental side of hitting that's out there big. Made it like 15 years ago, and it's as hot now as it's ever been. I'd update it to Q2, and it's just talking about the mind, man, talking about how to compete, how to be a better competitor than you are a player. And if you don't do that, bro, you're going to underachieve. And whether I'm talking to a Major League All-Star or the dad of a 12-year-old, this is all about getting the right guy playing, because we all got two players in us. I had confident Steve Springer, who's a really good player, and I got non-confident Steve Springer, who sucks. It's not good. So, you know, how do we get the right guy playing? And the biggest trap in this game, and it's my main vein when I speak, is your career starts when you say, I don't care what I hit. Batting average is the biggest trap in the game. It destroys more young kids than anything in the game. It destroys big leaguers. Because I could do everything right and go 0 for 4. I hit 3 balls right on the screws right at somebody, and baseball says you suck because your batting average went. And that's where the trap is. And this is why first-rounders can't get out of A-ball and guys not drafted spend 10 years in the big leagues. You know, I got a new game, new pitcher, new hero every single night. And most guys are going to bring the feeling of yesterday into their day. Now, there's no truer statement in my CD. You want to have fun, get hits. It's the greatest game in the world. But, sure. You know, if I could do everything right and go 0 for 4, and then I do nothing right and go 0 for 4, and now all of a sudden it's about me getting hits again. And it's 9-1. See, this is what we don't think of. I mean, we think every time we put the ball and play hard, we should get a hit. And this is what makes sense to these guys. If I could get players to do 4 things, walk up to play with confidence, with an attainable goal to hit the ball hard, check the inside part of a pitch I'm looking for, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. If I had a game tonight, I'm looking for 25 confident guys to show up with an attainable goal to hit the ball hard and to help my team win the game. And this is when we get the magic, when we get 25 confident guys showing up. And it doesn't mean you're going to win every game. It means we get the right guys playing. But like I said, I mean, baseball has a way to make you feel like you suck and you did everything right.
Well, I know we're going to dive back into that social media stuff here in a few minutes. But I know, and that's an awesome intro, man. And I also be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that, you know, for our Calls from Clubhouse podcast, we really want to highlight loyal ABCA guys. And obviously, Spring, you're one of those dudes. Man, you've been on the main stage a few times. I just love when you see yourself on stage, man, and you look out, the room's probably about as full as it ever gets. Like, you're one of the hot guys that speaks at our convention. Give us kind of your background with ABCA and your convention experience and everything with the association.
Well, it's funny. I mean, people ask, you get nervous when speaking in front of a couple thousand people? And I'm like, yeah, if you ask me a chemistry question. You know, I mean, we're talking baseball here. I remember the first time I ever spoke at the Texas High School Association, never spoke in front of a crowd, and they said, buddy, you got 40 minutes. And I lost sleep for 3 months because my CD was 35 minutes. And I'm like, what am I going to do with the other 5 minutes? Because I'm like a walking right. CD, you know. And now it's like, I think the ABCA just boosted my career. I think it was 2012 when I spoke there, and I spoke okay, and, you know, and sold some CDs, and I think it really put me on the map, you know, that what I'm teaching is right. And I don't mean to boast or pop off or anything, but I believe, you know, I mean, I got Major League All-Stars and other teams calling me, you know, weekly. And like I said, I tell them the same thing I tell the dad of a 12-year-old, and I think that's the best thing about what I teach. And, you know, when any time anybody wants to talk about mechanics, I mean, my mind goes straight to the mental side. Because as coaches, if we're just teaching mechanics, yeah, I mean, you're serving the appetizer and you're skipping the dinner, you know, and the dinner is about the mind and the mental side. And you know, there's so many good coaches out there. And, you know, this is the whole thing about these conventions is, you know, I didn't come out of the womb with this stuff. You know, you've learned it from talking baseball with good coaches. And, you know, I've spoken at a lot of the top colleges and meeting guys like Mike Gillespie and Augie Garrido and George Horton, who, you know, George Horton had my CD. I didn't even know what I had yet. I mean, I just made like 500 CDs and 500 tapes. I still have 495 tapes in my garage because I went out of style the next day. But I gave George one of my CDs, and a week later they're playing Miami in Miami. And, you know, he had his team listen to it 5 hours before they played the number one team in the country. And thank God they swept them and scored 11. And George told me it changed their season. And, you know, or I probably wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now without George Horton telling me that. And, you know, you get a great baseball coach like that buying into what you're teaching. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, stay on that because your reach is so far, man. It's beyond your work with the Blue Jays. It's you know, I know it's trickled into the upper levels of college baseball, but it's trickling into all levels of baseball. I know you're speaking with high school teams and travel teams, and give us your reach, man, the names, the colleges, the people that you're working with directly, because to your point, the best people are buying into what you're selling, and it seems to be working. So talk to us as our coaches, those listeners out there, man, here's the reach of what Spring's doing with QABs.
Well, I love talking to the main colleges. College is my main audience. It's the one that gets it the most. You know, they all want to play pro baseball. And I tell them, this is not about pro baseball right now. This is about you getting great at showing it for the school that you're playing. You know, you hear about kids getting draftitis and they're a junior and now they're worried about the wrong stuff. If coaches could get 25 confident guys to show up every single day, you know, I like the opening day mentality every single day. You play every day like it's opening day, and now it's good because nobody in the history of the game has ever walked up to the plate on opening day with no confidence because they got no yesterday beating me up. So let's have 60 opening day mentalities. You know, when I talk to these players and these coaches at the top schools, and now you got the top college coaches in the country saying, you know what, that's right, that's good. And it's just awesome. And you know, we think we have a 25-man roster. Trust me, it's a 50. Every single college has a 50-man roster, really, with 25 players because every player has two players on them. I got a confident guy that they recruited, and I got a non-confident guy that shows up too much. And this is the whole thing about stats. And, oh, but stats is how you get paid. I go, I hear you, bro. I'm trying to help you get your best stats by trying to get the right guy playing. Right? There's not a confident batting average stat and a non-confident batting average stat. It's one stat. It has no brain. It doesn't care who's showing up. You know, get the right guy playing, and you're going to get – I'm trying to help you hit 300 in pro ball or 400 in college by getting the right player to show up with an attainable goal to hit the ball hard and help my team win. It never goes off of that. I mean, whether I'm talking to Paul Goldschmidt or A.J. Pollock or Nolan Arenado, and that's big-time name-dropping, but these are the guys that call me. And I tell them the same thing I tell the colleges and the high school kids and the dads of 12-year-olds and getting great at being a better competitor than you are a player. But this league, this game, like I've said three times already, has a really, really easy way to make you feel like you suck, and yet you did everything right. So the mind and the mental side is everything. And if coaches aren't teaching the mind and the mental side and daily attainable goals, I can't stand it when I hear a kid say, oh, I want to hit 300 with 20 and 100. I'm like, really, buddy? And now you start the season off 1 for 20? How you feeling? Now we're in catch-up mode. And now you go three for four, and now you're 4 for 24, and you're still hitting under 200, and you're still letting that batting average play. Like when you get your two knocks, bring that guy into today. Because if I wrote the word confidence on a chalkboard and say, give me the definition for a hitter, trust me, it's when we get our knocks. I can talk quality at best till I'm blue in the face. It is when I get hits, I feel good. That's the physical feeling that we need, whether we're 4 for 4 or 0 for 4. And you get these guys buying into this and give them permission not to be perfect. Give them permission not to get 3 hits today. However, I need you to be the best competitor on the field with an attainable goal to hit the ball hard and help your team win. And that's where the freedom comes from. Because if you like your abilities and your abilities aren't showing up, it's not your abilities' problem. It's what we're thinking. It's what we think we feel. Now, that sounds a little like a psychologist. I can't spell psychology. I just know it starts with an S.
That's good stuff, though. And you just opened a can of worms because we're going to stay on that. I know I got you fired up. We're going to stay on that topic because if anybody out there is listening and they follow you on Twitter, at Quality at Bats, and they're listening to your messages – that you are so consistent in putting out. You are a Twitter savant, man. You're always on there kind of pumping those messages out. But if anybody's following along, the message seems to be very consistent, and it's right along the same lines of what you're diving into is, as a player, as coaches, we have to get our players away from batting average. We have to get them focused on the attainable goals because the game's going to obviously crush us, and we still love it, but we've got to have a better game plan. Dive into that a little bit more, like your mission behind QualityAtBats.com and your stance on batting average is evil.
Well, I mean, I could give you so many stories. I mean, one of my favorite trips was Augie Garrido, Hall of Famer, has me come in, and they were out of it. They were like, you know, they didn't even make their conference championship. I think it was 2012 or 13, and I know Tommy Nicholson. I say, you want me to talk to your team? Oh, yeah, that'd be great. But I wish you were at the end of the year. So I go in there and I leave and Augie says, I want you back here next year for 3 days. So I go back there. The same exact team that just was ninth place in their conference was one game away from the national championship with freshmen. Not a big transfer coming in. And to have a guy like this buy into opening day, it's not about you. It's about you helping your team. And getting these guys to actually buy into that and then seeing that happen, I mean, it is so cool. I mean, Cal State Fullerton, you know, great program, you know, and I spoke to them a couple times last year. Like I said, it's my favorite age because these guys have ability or they wouldn't even be there. And it goes back to the ability question. If you like your abilities and your abilities aren't showing up, it's not your abilities problem. As coaches, we recruit these guys that we see a couple times and we see them good, and now all of a sudden, you know, they show up. And now it's about stats and how many hits did you get. And somewhere along the line, you know, we've turned baseball into a three-hour timeout, like we're in trouble, right? Nobody's in trouble, right? I mean, if anybody's out there playing with tension, anxiety, and pressure, I mean, go join the military because that's where the pressure is. We're playing baseball, and this is about calmness, toughness, focus, having a little bit of funness, if that's a word, right? And when we get guys to have some fun. Yeah, we get guys to have some fun. I mean, I just had a meeting with our Dunedin Blue Jay team. You know, have fun, man. This is not a three-hour timeout. You're not in trouble. But, you know, and then all of a sudden we get the coaches that are yellers and screamers. I'm not on that, man. This game's hard enough. I don't need my coach beating me up, my teammate beating me up, or my parent beating me up. Right? This game's going to do it by itself. Right? You build them up, you break them down, you build them up again. I mean, one of the greatest lines I ever heard, the first time I ever heard it, was when Ken Revisa was speaking, I think it was in Dallas or Chicago at ABCA, and he said, coaches, he says, if you don't understand one thing I say in the next 50 minutes, remember this, is players need to know that you care before they care what you know. And yes. That's why I feel like I could tell 100 players to go stand in the corner and they'll do it. because they know that every word out of my mouth is going to try and help them be a big leaguer and a good person. And it's as simple as that, man.
I think the beauty of, and this is me speaking as a former coach, the beauty of quality at bats is you do not do what most quote unquote hitting coaches dive into, where it's strictly mechanics. And almost a hitting coach is more of a swing coach. And you stay more on just the approach, the mindset, what's between the ears, which I think resonates with a lot of people, because it's really starting to make almost a run back to where coaches are realizing that that's where it all starts. We can fine-tune a swing the best we can, but, man, if the guy isn't right between the ears, we're obviously walking uphill. But I think studying the pitcher for info, hunting pitches, dive into that in terms of your approach to what you're giving those guys at the plate and how they're going to be successful doing that.
Well, and you hit it right on the screws. I mean, for me, hitting is about the mentality of how I feel. It's about approach, and it's about mechanics. And all three are important, but it is in that order. And I'm almost convinced that the approach is even better, more important than how I feel. I would rather have a guy with 80% confidence and a great approach than 100% confidence and no approach. Right? It's way too many hitters trying to hit the fastball, curveball, slide-up, change-up, They're looking for everything. They're not ready for anything. Right? How come we could all hit the breaking ball machine in the cage and it turns invisible during the game? Right? Because, I can't let that fastball get by me. You know, and I went 6,000 at-bats looking for the fastball. And my production doubled when I started sitting on something I was going to get rather than what I want to hit. You know, and Clint Hurdle's one of my mentors. He was my teammate in 1986. He's my manager in 1992-93. And he said it as good as you could say it. It's really, really hard to hit 94 and 79 at the same time. And for me, why would I want to until I get two strikes?
Sure.
Right? This is about taking controlled, violent swings. Hitting is controlled violence. It's not violent violence, not controlled control. It's a controlled violent act to hit a baseball. And if I'm sitting on a fastball and I get a fastball, it's going to be a fastball, not if. I mean, it's called harder BP. But it's called harder batting practice. I'm looking for it. I get it. But where most hitters are up there thinking, oh, I'm going to sit fastball and adjust. It might be in your ear. It might be a slider in the dirt. Now it's if it's a strike. And we don't have that. You know, you got about less than a half a second to make up your mind. Everybody's better be some timing in that mindset that it's going to be my pitch until it's not, not if it's going to be my pitch. And Right. Now I'm going to take a controlled, violent swing. And if I'm 0-0, 1-0, 2-1, 3-1, I'm not trying to slap a single around. I'm going deep sea fishing, bro. We're throwing singles back. That's one of Mark Trumbo's let my son and told him that one day, and he's like, dude, that's gold. Mark Trumbo, I met him, and I used to hit with Hank Conger when he was 12, and they're in AA, and I'm scouting the Angels, and I asked Hank if he wanted to go out to a lunch, and Trumbo shows up. He wants a free lunch from the new guy. They were roommates, and he didn't say two words the whole time. I didn't even know what he liked. Give him my CD, give him the same spiel I give everybody. And then the next year, I get a text from Trumbo, and he said, Spring had four crappy at-bats, couldn't get you out of my mind. Fifth at bat, two run double, walk off, believe it. And that's when I knew he was in. And you know, now he's like my son, and I pull for him. And, this is about taking controlled violent swings, man. It's a violent act to hit a baseball, but it's under control. And now I'm sitting on a speed. And if I'm sitting fast, when he throws it on the outside block, nice pitch, buddy. But two thirds of that plate, if I'm sitting on that fastball, bro, I am going to take a controlled violent swing, and I like looking up in the zone and adjusting to the knee high, because a lot of guys look for the knee high strike, and now they elevate it, and the bat head comes underneath, and now we're underneath it. That's why I told Trumbo that last year. I said, bro, let's sit up. Let's look up under your chest for that fastball, because it's going to be easier for you to look up and go down than it will be to go down and come up. He's like, really? You're holding that back after 7 years?
At least you got it now.
he's off to a great start. But here's a guy that is one of the best competitors in baseball, right? And this is the whole thing, man. A.J. Pollock, I got my CD when he was a sophomore in college. He listened to it every single day, went out to the Cape, MVP of the Cape, said if he was in his car, it was on. See, we give ourselves too much credit to remember what we're taught, right? I give you my whole spiel, and in about 2 weeks, what I say, something about the batting average. Well, if I know as a player, if I have a coach that makes me good, I'm getting something on audio with that coach talking about me. And that's what I did with I had a guy named Tommy McCraw. that was just as, I mean, every time he was around, I was a stud because I'm an idiot. I carried for 3 days. And as dumb as I was smart enough to realize when that guy was around, I was good. So I went up to his room, 1987. He was nice enough to talk to me about me. I brought a tape recorder. It changed my life. If I was in my car for 7 years, it was on. And that's what AJ did. And AJ Pollock, I promise you, 4 years ago, every scout thought this guy was a really good fourth outfielder on a championship team. They had no idea what was in his heart and in his mind. And it's just awesome to see the success that he has. And I wanted to cry when he got, you know, hurt this year. And his new best friend's Paul Goldschmidt. Paul Goldschmidt cruises through the minor leagues. He hits eight home runs in September, and they give him the job the next year. No, he earned the job. They didn't give him anything. And now he starts off hitting 182 home runs. Look it up. In April, and he's about ready to get sent down. They just like, dude, call this guy's a good guy. So I get a call from Goldschmidt. I don't even know what he looks like. And I tell him the same thing I tell the dad of a 12-year-old. Your career starts tonight, bro, when you say, I don't care what I hit. Batting average, biggest trap in the game. I need you to be the best competitor on the field with attainable goal hit ball hard and help your team win. It doesn't mean you're getting three hits. It means the right Goldschmidt's showing up. Well, thank God he got two hits that night. Now he's texting me, hey, Spring, what do you got, babe? He started a 17-game hitting streak with eight home runs. And it's just awesome when the best hitter in baseball calls you.
And I'm not the first one to say this. This is from old coaches, man. But if you pay attention to the game, it'll teach you everything you need to know. And if you're, you know, a baseball nut and you're watching and you're paying attention, you started to kind of, and maybe it's just because we're more aware, but you started to see this trend over the last maybe 10 years, 15 years, where guys are really taking time to take a deep breath. They're really trying to slow the game down. And I think that's become more coaching talk now, and you've heard Ken Revisa. You mentioned his name. I know he was huge on this. Obviously, we've had Alan Jager on. I know Alan's big on the deep breath. But you use it as well because it is a way to slow the game down. Can you give some guys some more insight into that?
Well, yeah, and it goes back to what you talked about, too, watching the game. I mean, I tell every guy that I talk to, you don't have five at-bats today. You got 25 minimum, but 20 are when your buddies are hitting, and you're seeing that pitch, and you see what he's throwing. You got the little lefty out there throwing 2-1 changeups. Your buddies and is successful, and now you come up with runners on second and third, and you think you're going to get 2-1 middle and fastball? No, I'm going to hunt the off speed, right? I'm in control in this box until I get two strikes. And now you're talking about breathing and slowing the game down, and you're going to be your best athlete when your heartbeat's between 60 and 80, right? And I tell my guys the only time I want your heartbeat over 80 is when you hit a triple. Other than that, bro,
right.
I'm in control in this box. And I call it dancing with the pitcher, and I'm the girl, right? So I'm going to time my breathing off this pitcher, and I'm going to get my energy up in my chest right when he's about at his release point, and I'm going to take a controlled, violent swing. Like I said, that's what hitting is. It's not violent violence, not control, control. It's a controlled, violent act, and there's power in breathing. And when I was at the Mets, we had a guy named Saul Miller, who was a sports psychologist, you know, 5'2", 120, never put a jock on in his life. And he's talking about breathing, and 90% of the guys go, what's this guy know? Well, I listen. And talking about getting energy from the trees and taking that crappy swing, stepping outside the box, taking a deep breath, right, and getting back into your breathing. And there's so much power in breathing. If you're going to bench press, you don't bring the bench down with no air. You breathe in so you can exhale. And that's the same thing with hitting. And it's taking a controlled, violent swing and making 94 look 84, right? And hitting his slow feet, fast hands, quiet head. Taking a controlled, violent swing on the inside part of a pitch I'm looking for. Done with my mechanics, right? I mean, I think the feet screw up more hitters than anything in the game. We all want to be Donaldson now and Batista. And, well, let's get one thing straight. These guys have bionic wrists, you know? So not everybody, just because they do the mechanics, is going to be that guy. I got interviewed by the Colorado Rockies about 4 years ago by Bill Guyvette and Walt Weiss over the phone for 30 minutes. I couldn't have spoke better. I'm thinking to myself, honey, we're moving to Colorado. And I'm about ready to hang up the phone. They go, Spring, I know mechanics. I go, yeah, hitting slow feet, fast hands, quiet head with the tall backside, attacking the inside part of the pitch I'm looking for. Done with my mechanics. These guys have had the same mechanics since they were eight. It's not about the mechanics. Maybe a little minor adjustment. It's about the mind. It's about the compete. It's about the opening day process. I love the line that nobody has ever in the history of the game walked up to the plate on opening day with no confidence, all five at-bats, because they got no yesterday beating them up. and yesterday is the biggest killer in baseball.
You just opened another door for us, because I definitely want to hear, it's as close as you get to mechanics, but it's really not. It's still staying on approach. But talk about hunting the inside of the ball, because I think that's an area where a lot of coaches get confused, and it kind of errs on the wrong side of teaching. But dive into that, because you hit it so well, and it stays on approach. But talk about getting to the inside part of the baseball.
Well, I think we all hear the analogy, stay inside the ball. Well, I believe that there's a big difference between staying inside the ball and attacking the inside part of the baseball, right? I mean,
sure.
if Albert Pujols or Prince Fielder or, you know, Donaldson swings about as hard as he could swing it, how come he doesn't hit a home run every at bat? Because it's the contact point of the baseball. So I will never not put a ball on a tee with the two seams, you know, facing the catcher. And that inside seam, for me, is where the backspin comes from. And now it's about contact point. I don't want you to hit an inside pitch to right field if you're right-handed. I want you to hit a bomb, but the contact point's out in front of the plate a little bit. There's three things that get guys out more than anything. One, it's walking up the plate with no confidence. Two, it's approach, and they're looking for everything. They're not ready for anything. And three is pulling pitches that shouldn't be pulled and being a good hitter.
Yeah.
You know, power is the most overrated tool in scouting if you can't hit. And so now I'm attacking the inside part of the baseball. I'm hitting that ball that's middle away, you know, through the pitcher's left ear and the second baseman in double play depth. I was a right-handed hitter, right? Because you could look away and still hit in. You can't look in and hit away. And now I'm looking for that inside part of the baseball. Not every home run goes 450 feet. 330 works down a 325 line, and you miss it.
Right.
You know, but your misses on the outside part of the ball, you might even hook a home run. You might hook some line drives to the left, but your misses are going to be ground balls. It's like I heard an interview with Chris Bryant. His whole goal was to hit five balls in the air every night. You know, so we got to know what type of player we are.
Wow.
This guy's got power. Why does he want to hit a ground ball? It's what I teach. I mean, I did it. I touched it. I felt it. I remember I was in Calgary in 1991, and the BP pitcher threw up and in, and I hit it out. I missed it. Wow, how'd that happen? And I just got to the inside part of the baseball. But now we're walking up the plate with confidence, with an attainable goal, hit the ball hard, help my team. When I'm hunting speeds, and I got my breathing under control, I'm attacking the inside part of the pitch, I'm confident. My whole goal is to hit the ball hard. That's where the freedom comes from. There's so many guys that are really, really good in batting practice, and it's one of my favorite analogies, batting practice flips and tee work. Freaking checkers. We're all good at checkers. We're all good at flips and underhand flips and BP. The chess game starts at 7. The game. Get labeled a chess player. Get labeled a gamer. Right? If I said I want everybody to think of the biggest overachiever in baseball, 80% of the guys just thought of Dustin Pedroia. he's not an overachiever.
Yeah.
He's good. Right? But because
he's
not 6'2", oh, he overachieved. No, he's good. But do you know how many underachievers there are in this game? There's no such thing as an overachiever in the big leagues. He's good.
Right.
An overachiever in the big leagues is a scout saying, well, he's better than what I thought he was, and he can't be wrong. You know,
yeah.
So there's no such thing as an overachiever if you get to the big leagues. I wasn't an overachiever. I was freaking good. You know, but if you got drafted in the top five rounds and did not play in the big leagues for 5 years, something happened mentally, not physically.
You touched on this earlier, and I keep coming back because I think going in more detail is always great for our listeners. But we all see it as coaches. We see the generational differences that every coach talks about, but we see the entitlement. I know Augie had a great speech last year about that at Cal State Fullerton's banquet, talking about entitlement, and it really is just making coaches more aware that the kids we're dealing with now are just a tad different than maybe we were coached. But you kind of spend some time talking about that, because I think where it shows, where that difference comes out, is when that kid's not in the lineup and that kid's now having to be a teammate and he's having to root on people in front of him. Talk about that, because your focus on that being a great teammate is just so huge, and I want you to dive into that for our listeners.
How do you handle not playing? Because non-playing sucks. I wanted to play. Here's how you handle it. You take BP like it's your game. You take ground balls during BP like it's your game, if you're an infielder, and fly balls in the outfielder. And then you pull for your teammates and be ready when the coach calls your name, because he's going to call it. And now we get the, you know, if we're not careful, we're going to get the guy that's been mopey and pissed off and get the wrong guy playing. You know, I mean, you got to be ready. And when you get ready, You know, trust me, when I finally got the shot to play second base, if I don't get those four knocks that day, if I wasn't ready mentally to go out there and compete, and I felt I was a good teammate, I mean, my first 10 teams I was ever on in pro baseball, every single team made the playoffs. And I wasn't the main cog, but I guarantee you I was a cog, Inc., because I tried to make my teammates better, right? Don't be that guy, basically. You know, that guy where you walk up to the conversation stops till you walk away. You know, if you're an idiot and you're playing this game, if you're not hitting, you're going to have a real job real soon because nobody wants to hang out with you.
A lot to that, isn't it? And that it transcends baseball, man. It's a life lesson that they need to learn through our game, just like they do, you know, all the other lessons. But it's one of those things, man, even when you get into an office setting or you get into real life, you still got to be a great teammate. You still got to root on the people around you. You still want to be approachable and likable, and it's a lesson that transcends.
Well, it's like when I talk to these guys, you know, everybody thinks when you get to pro baseball, you're actually competing against guys on your team. No, you want your buddies in the big leagues with you, right? There's more than just you. You want your buddies to play. There's 30 teams out there. And until you put the Toronto Blue Jay big league, and even when you do, you're playing for 30 teams. You don't know who's in the stands. You don't know who's scouting you. You know, this is why I'm always talking about hustling, playing the game the right way. Sometimes it's one scout that says, you know what, I'm on this guy, let's get him. It doesn't have to be all 30, you know. And it's just like when I got drafted that one day. One day got me drafted. And so now, you know, all these college kids want to get drafted. Well, you better be ready every single day because you don't know when that's going to pass you by.
Again, I'm going to put this back on a tee for you, man. Your message isn't just for players. It really kind of dives into the role of parents and coaches. And you talked about a little bit through our talk today, but give the advice, give the message that you have for those people, the coaches and parents out there listening in.
Well, if we're gonna change the culture of baseball, it has to start with the parent of the T-ball kid, the 12U guy, right? Because every parent would actually die for their kid. They'd literally die for their son, yet they absolutely sabotage their sports career by putting so much tension and anxiety and pressure on their kids. Right? These kids didn't come out of the womb with tension, anxiety, and pressure, but all of a sudden their six-year-old is getting yelled at by some Johnny Testosterone coach that couldn't make his JV team, and now all of a sudden the kids are tight. And, you know, I made a parent CD also for the parent to try and give them a better chance to have their kid play with their man body, because most kids will quit this game at 13 years old because of the pressure that's put on them by the one who loves them the most, us parents. Right? When I was coaching my 11, 12-year-old team with Rich Amaral, who played 9 years in the big leagues, my best friend, we would put little two stickers on the back of their helmet if they had a quality at bat. And it was awesome. There was no crying. It wasn't about getting hits anymore. It was about getting that little sticker. And we had the biggest spaz in the league on our team. And if this guy fouled the ball off, we made him feel like he was Mike Trout. We were like, "Atta boy, Neil, get your helmet over here." Yes. And his parents loved this because nobody's ever built their son up in sports. You couldn't. He was too big a spaz. Yeah. But we did. And these parents need to realize that too many kids quit at 13 years old, and now they quit with their little kid body, and all of a sudden they get this great body, and now they want to go out for the team in high school, and they haven't played in 5 years, you know. So we got to build them up, and when you do this with the kids, trust me, I'm not holier than now. I got kicked out of a 12-year-old All-Star game. This freaking umpire was so bad. I said, "Could you try not to be a factor in the game, please?" And he kicked me out. So I don't mean to come off as older than now, but I've seen it all, man. I mean, I play tennis back home, and I got my mixed doubles partner, club champ, by the way, but I need to say that.
There you go.
I finally meet her boyfriend. He knows everything about me after a year. And the first word out of his mouth, he's like, "Yeah, I'm coaching my 7-year-old travel ball team." I said, "Nice." I said, "So you know you're coaching the biggest self-esteem destroying sport in the world, right, bud?" He's like, "What?" I go, "Yeah, your little 7-year-old makes an error. He wants to cry. The other team's cheering. He doesn't like that. Coach is yelling. That's you. And then he's got to ride home with you. So for one error, your little 7-year-old who wants an ice cream after the game because he's 7, he's not your little Mike Trout yet, is going to get beat up 4 times to get ready for him to quit at 13. Well, we get interrupted. I don't see the guy. I don't say another word to him. 2 months later, I'm downtown Huntington Beach, watch my boy Trumbo playing for the Angels, and I see the guy. And he walks right up to me, and he said, "You changed my life." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "When you told me my son's playing the biggest self-esteem destroying sport in the world," he said, "you hit me right between the teeth. I was so embarrassed I couldn't even talk. Thank God we got interrupted." 2 months later now, I'm the most positive coach on the field. When I hear another coach or a parent yell at a seven-year-old, I cringe. Me and my son go get ice cream after the game. You're right. And my ex-wife, she wants to remarry me because she can't believe it's me. I'm like, sorry about that, buddy.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to take it down that road. Yeah, but this is how parents are, you know, but yet they die for their kid. And so I'm trying to hit the parents when I go speak across the country, and a lot of it's to travel ball organizations. And you know, I'll get parents coming up to me in tears and saying, number one, you're the best public speaker I've ever heard. Now I need to go apologize to my kid. I'm just like, wow.
That's awesome. Well, that, and again, you just kind of keep leading me down the line, man. But coaches need to know, if they're listening, they need to know how to get a hold of your stuff. Obviously, the quality of bat CD, the Q2s, but also you're doing an online academy. You're also doing your own podcast. Give them the directions, man. Talk about all the things that you're into and how they can get their hands on your stuff.
Well, number one, I mean, it's amazing that if you like my tweets, you don't have my CD DVD. It's, you know, parents are spending $300 on a bat, $300 on a glove, you know, $75 a week on a hitting lesson, and, you know, they're not teaching them the mind, how to compete. And, you know, on my website, I got Arenado, Goldschmidt, and Pollock at the All-Star Game, and underneath it says, trust us, parents, it's worth $60. And it is. It's money back guarantee. If you don't like it, I'll give your money back. I'm not trying to screw anybody. I'm trying to help. And so qualityatbats.com, highly recommend the CD DVD and the parent CD if you're 12 and under. I made a pitching CD last year that I think's good. And I have an online academy. You get a free month in. It's qualityatbatsacademy.com. We got, you know, interviews. We interviewed Bobby Tewksbury, you know, Donaldson's coach. We got a bunch of players. Nolan Arenado. I mean, it's really going well. I got over 30 little 1-2 minute videos. You can upload your swing. We'll take a look at your swing, and you know it's going good. I speak all over the country. This is another important thing about getting good grades, man. There are so many good colleges out there, whether it's D1, D2, D3, and I've spoken to some of the most awesome D3 programs that I never even heard of. That are looking for kids that get good grades, you know. So all the kids out there and the parents out there, get your kid to get good grades, man. It's so easy to let them scoot by and go, you know, just barely get by. And all of a sudden, you know, they could have a full ride to a great D2 or D3 college and they can't get in. But any coaches out there, I mean, yeah, hit me up on qualityatbats@AOL.com. I speak all over the country. It's definitely my passion.
Well, Spring, on behalf of the ABCA, man, and personally for me, I want to thank you for being on today, man. I think your information is so vital, and I hope more guys are buying into it and listening, and I hope, obviously, it takes off for you. It's been a pleasure to chat with you, man. I wish you all the luck in the world. Enjoy your last few little run here with the pro teams, and I hope you are safe in your travels, man. Look forward to hearing from you soon.
I appreciate it, buddy. I had a great time, man. God bless you all, and we'll do it again.
Absolutely. Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
What a great interview, and it's always entertaining to sit down and talk the game with Steve Springer. We want to thank Spring for taking time out of his schedule, being on the road with the Blue Jays, to sit down and talk with us and our coaches, and being on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Take a look at our website, abca.org, if you want more information about what we're doing. We hope, if you haven't already, join the over 8,000 coaches worldwide that are passionate ABCA members. We also hope, as you look forward to January 5th through the 8th of 2017, you're planning on a trip out to Anaheim, California. We'll be having our annual ABCA convention, the world's largest gathering of baseball coaches. Thanks again for listening in. We hope to hear from you very soon. Thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball.